Oasis Podcast Episode 34, Who Built the Moon Review, and Jess Greenfield. Welcome back to the Oasis podcast. I hope you guys are all right, and I hope you're all enjoying your new Noel Gallagher album, Who Built the Moon. Came out a week or so ago, and yeah, what are you thinking? I think we are going to do a reaction review. Sorry, I haven't been able to do that yet. I've had a few technical difficulties, so I haven't been able to sort of book in a time to do some recording with you guys, but I do plan to over the next week or so. So keep your eyes peeled to Twitter for that, and if you'd like to get involved and give your thoughts over the phone and then be part of the next episode, then you are more than welcome to do so. Later on in this episode, I've got an interview with Jess Greenfield. Now, she is the one of the new members of the Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds. She's one that wasn't playing the scissors on Jules Holland, as we get into it. But yeah, that was a really good, fun discussion. It was a great to speak to her and get a real insider's view on what it's like to be part of the High Flying Birds and being welcomed into that team. So yeah, I hope you enjoy that interview, and Jess seems like a lovely person, so make sure you're following her on all the typical channels. I've also done an interview with Audrey, aka EC, but the feedback I've had in the podcast is I think you guys have felt that the episodes have run a bit long. I was going to put these two out together as a kind of a Who Built the Moon preview episode with the two new High Flying Birds. But as I say, just the interview itself with Jess is over an hour. So I thought, well, let's space it out. I'll take the feedback from you guys and space it out a little bit. And so we'll do Audrey in a separate episode. But we'll just see how that goes. So I'm going to do the main part of my thoughts when we do the reaction episode, but I just wanted to give my initial views and just give a flavour of what we've been seeing on Twitter. And as with all of his stuff as it's dropped in, it's been very divisive again. A lot of people absolutely loving it, a lot of people love it with reservations, some people really don't like it. There's one very funny video that someone posted to me of them putting the CD into their car and then literally taking it out, throwing it out the window, and then putting As You Were on, which I thought was quite entertaining. I wonder if they then went and picked the CD up again. Yeah, it's quite funny how there's been such a variance of opinion. And actually listening to it, I didn't think it was that out there. I think Fort Knox was pretty out there, and certain sounds on Holy Mountain were very different, as we've covered. But the actual album itself, yeah, there's definitely some out there moments and things, but generally I don't think it's hugely outrageously different like the potential for the Amorphous Androgynous project could have been. The one thing I would say straight away is that I really like it. I think it's a great album. I've listened to it quite a few times now. I've listened to it in the car while doing other things, on headphones and just on normal stereo. And yeah, I think it's great. I think it was the right thing for Noel to do, to go off and do something different, to go and work with someone different and mix up the creative process a little bit, because he often will just go back to the tried and tested routines and the tried and tested methods, which, yeah, they work fine, they're great. But, you know, my criticism of his last couple of albums and some of the stuff in later Oasis years was that he just needed to try and do something different and mix it up a little bit. And it feels like he's done that. So you can't really then complain. If he then goes and does the thing that you were hoping he does, you can't then whinge that, oh, it's not the same as I liked before. So it's a lose-lose situation for him, isn't it? But going back, going through it track by track, I mean, one of the things I felt was that it does feel like an uneven album. And I think it's really the use of the interludes in it in the second half. And I, you know, although I listen primarily on Spotify these days, I still do tend to think of albums as side A and side B. And if I was sequencing the album, I would be doing it in side A and side B. And side A starts with Fort Knox, which is an absolute stomper. And I think it's great. You know, it's grown on me a lot more since I first heard it. Works perfectly as an album opener, and it sets the tone. And Audrey's vocals are fantastic, and it's just got such a cool vibe to it. The only criticism I had on it was that I think that the Get Yourself Together part maybe takes a little bit too long to kick in, and it holds it back and holds it back. But actually, having had the album kind of settle with me for a week or so now, I'm cool with that. Actually, I think that it's, you know, when you're just used to it and you're ready for it, it's fine. I think it's more just the expectation of having the new thing that you want it to kick in, you want it to be dynamic and change. You don't necessarily want it to take its time, whereas yeah, I'm a bit more happy with that now. Holy Mountain I think is a stomper. It's been great to hear it. Yes, we can all take the mick out of the various elements that make up the song as a whole. It is a mishmash of lots of different bits and pieces of different things, but hey, you can't have a go at him for that. He's been doing that since day one in Oasis, since Shaker Maker, you know. So yeah, great. I'm really looking forward to hearing that when it's done live on the upcoming tour. Then we're going to Keep On Reaching, which is my favorite song on the album. I really love, as you hear me saying to Jess later, and as you've heard in this podcast before, I love 60s soul. It's kind of my favorite music. So for Noel to sort of go into that world, I mean, it is the Paul Weller version of 60s soul, let's be honest, but I still think it's great. I think it's got that cool vibe to it, and that Can You Keep a Secret, I think, is a very cool refrain to go back to. So yeah, love Keep On Reaching. I think it's the best track on the album. Then we go into the two sort of big pop singles, as I would suggest, on the album, which is It's a Beautiful World and She Taught Me How to Fly. It's a Beautiful World, I've kind of still a bit annoyed by the muffled effect on the vocal. That often annoys me in songs. I'd just rather hear the vocal properly. I kind of get what you're going for. You're going for a style or a feeling, but I'd just rather hear what he's singing, thanks. So that's a little bit annoying, but I still think It's a Beautiful World's a great track, and I really like the French vocal as well. I think it's interesting, the fact it's like some weird kind of end of the world thing while he's singing about It's a Beautiful World in the main song itself. I think it's quite weird and interesting, and so well done though. I think it's a good piece of work. She Taught Me How to Fly is just a straightforward love song to me, and I think it's a good love song. I definitely think when he was talking about when he was talking in that interview about sounding like Blondie, yep, I can hear that in there, definitely. There's definitely tones of Blondie in there. But ultimately, it's just a really nice, straight-up love song. So, yeah, good stuff. Then we get into one of the more divisive tracks on the album, which I suppose on the vinyl would be closing off side A, which is Be Careful What You Wish For. Now, this is the one that a lot of people have pointed out bears a very strong resemblance to Come Together. And when I listen to it through, I mean, straight away, it just jumps out. Especially with him going, chick-a-pow. You know, it's so close to Come Together. It's kind of a bit silly, but, you know, once again, he's allowed to do it. He's Noel. That's kind of what he's always done. Straight away, I just thought, well, that's the weakest track on the album, because it just drags on for so long. I've seen a few people on online defending it, saying they really like it, and actually having listened to it a few more times and just sort of got into the vibe of it, and maybe not been listening so intently, but just, you know, listen to it while doing other things and stuff. I think it does. If you just let it wash over you and just get into the vibe of it, yeah, it's a lot. It's fine. It's a really good song, and I really like it. It's actually Audrey who comes in at the end with her vocal, and I really like that element at the end of it, so it's worth it for that. And it's also maybe got one of the most interesting lyrical parts on the album, where he says, "And if you're waiting for the rapture, the day will never come." And he keeps repeating, "The day will never come." And I think that's interesting, as Waiting for the Rapture is an Oasis song. And so is he talking about, you know, if you're waiting for Oasis to get back together, that will never come? Or is it, you know, literally he's talking about the rapture, he's talking about the sort of end of the world situation? And because he's talking about God in that song as well, as he, as we've mentioned on here before, he often talks about God in quite a flippant way usually, but yeah, it comes up again and again. So maybe it's that, maybe it's Oasis, don't know. So then we get into Black and White Sunshine, which is like a very birdsy track. It's got a lot of heat of the moment about it. And then the chorus does that thing that a lot of Noel songs do, which is it just does, repeats the same note over and over again, which I've mentioned on here before. It's quite funny that he's picked up as the great writer of melodies, and yet often his melodies will just do the same note over and over again, or they'll just bounce between two notes. And this is another example of that on the chorus. It does just shoot the same note over and over again pretty much, but I think it works well. I don't think it's the greatest track on the album, but it's just a good solid track. Then we go into the interlude, so Wednesday Part 1. Now, I really like these interludes, however I don't know if they're the right thing for the album, because you've got two interludes that sound pretty much the same. I'd probably find it difficult to, if you picked out an element of one or the other, to tell you which one was which. I mean, they could even be the same one repeated. I probably wouldn't even tell. And it's where it comes in the album. So the side two kicks off with Black and White Sunshine. Then you go into this interlude, so everything sort of slows down a little bit. And while I do really like it, you know, I love the French band Air, and this sounds to me like a lot like Air, a lot of like their sort of Virgin Suicides kind of period, which is a brilliant album if you haven't got that. But yeah, it's a great little piece of music. I think it's really nice and really good, but just slows down the pace when you've just started off the second side of the album with Black and White Sunshine, which is quite upbeat, and then it drops down a notch, which is fine, but there you go. And then we go into If Love Is the Law, which is I think one of the stronger tracks, where we've then go into, I think he when he was interviewing Chris Evans, they sort of said, oh, it's got an Aztec camera vibe or a ruddy frame. You know, I think it's, I can hear that in there. I think it's quite an interesting one in Noel's little magpie steals. The melody at the start of the verse definitely has a touch of Misery by the Beatles about it. But yeah, other than that, I think it's a really good track. Really enjoy it. It's got overall a great produced sound and a great melody throughout. So yeah, really good classic Noel track. Then we get into, I think, the highlight of the album, which is this song, The Man Who Built the Moon. I think it was the right thing to call the album after this track as well. Because, yeah, what a epic piece this is, you know, from the that weird discordant sound as well. It's just sort of, it's quite probably the most challenging thing on the album, in that you hear that discordant, I presume it's a guitar playing it. But then just as it kicks into that, We Never Should Have Left Town in the First Place, it just challenges the ear in a way that you don't often get in Oasis albums. And I think lyrically it's very interesting. I mean, that line about we never should have left town in the first place, you know, that's like a, you know, it talks about shadows fall and the spider and the fly and things like that. It's got lots of interesting imagery. It feels very cinematic to me, like a kind of a weird horror film or whatever, which I think is great. So yeah, I think that's one of the strongest songs I've heard him do for years, so really pleased with that one. But then we go into end credits, so then we go into the next kind of interlude, which is fine. As I say, once again, it's just a nice sort of couple of minutes of instrumental music, and then that's the end of the album. So a bit strange if you think about it. You know, we go Fort Knox, Holy Mountain, Keep on Reaching, It's a Beautiful World, She Taught Me How to Fly. So we have five strong, upbeat songs straight away. And then side two ends on a bit of a downer. We'd be careful what you wish for. And then we come back in again, Black and White Sunshine, up and uplifting. And then down into an interlude. And then an uplifting song, If Love Is the Law. And then The Man Who Built the Moon was this sort of weird, dark, epic thing. And then end credits. So it's an unusual kind of second side, really. But strange. you know, strange sort of pacing and things, but anyway, that's how he's chosen to do it. And then we go into Dead in the Water. Now this is an interesting one, and what I said on Twitter, it kind of ended up in a little bit of an argument with someone, which is standard behaviour on Twitter, to be fair. One of the points I made about Dead in the Water is it, you can listen to Who Built the Moon, the main album, ending with end credits, and think, that's a great album. But then you listen to Dead in the Water, which, you know, it isn't part of the album. This is a bonus track. It's recorded separately. It's nothing to do with these sessions with David Holmes. So, you know, I'm not counting this part of the album. And then you listen to that and you think, that's what the album was missing. Because it's got heart and it's got beautiful lyrics and it's got this lilting melody. It's powerful. It's, you know, it's got such an emotional strength to it. And it makes you think, yes, that is what's lacking on the album. And this process of him writing in the studio with David Holmes, being challenged and pushed and, you know, don't do the obvious thing and everything's got to be sort of put together on the spot, kind of instant karma style. Well, it then doesn't give you the ability to go away and craft a beautiful, perfect song like Dead in the Water is. And so, yeah, so it's a great song. But in putting the song on there, I think it kind of demonstrates what the album is lacking. And yeah, and so for me, I think that the album as it is sort of a strong 8 out of 10. I think if it had a couple more moments like Dead in the Water, or maybe if Dead in the Water had been recorded to be part of these sessions, or if there had been another like big single ballady moment like Dead in the Water in the style of David Holmes productions, then great, that would have also been fantastic. And the other thing I thought, and I did mention it on Twitter the other day as well, is it feels like a shame that, going back to the sequencing of the album, you've got these two interludes, and Fort Knox is a opener, which is pretty much an instrumental, and yet he hasn't made the most of that. I think just sequencing the album slightly differently and merging some of the tracks in could have been really interesting and really changed the overall feel of it, made it more into a concept, made it more into an overall piece of music. So I think, like, similar to the Abbey Road second side, the way that all the tracks interlink and bits come back into each other, I think even if he'd done that through the whole album, or even if he'd only done it through half of the album, with the interludes coming back in, then maybe other tracks bleeding into each other and other themes coming back in, starting in one song, coming back into another, I think if he just brought that into it a bit more, I think it would have lifted it up a notch. I think we could then be talking about a 9 out of 10 album rather than an 8 out of 10. But, you know, he hasn't done that, and you know, as I think I said in the tweet about Liam's album, I've sort of found myself in the weeks after Liam's album looking back at my initial thoughts and thinking maybe I was a bit harsh on it because I was looking for the album I wanted and not cherishing the album that they gave us. And I think it's probably a similar situation here. So while overall, you know, it's a great album. It's a great piece of work. It's great to have him back. The voice is strong. Yeah, there's times when the production's a bit bizarre, both on the voice and in the album as a whole, and you can't really hear it as well. But yeah, the voice is strong. I think the bass playing's excellent on the album. I think the bass throughout it is great. I think the overall different sounds and elements that are brought into it are great. It is sonically interesting throughout. Although a few people have mentioned about like the production being quite muffled or quite difficult to ascertain, and yeah, I can hear that. It doesn't bother me that much, but I do get where people are coming from on that. I haven't really delved into the lyrics that much on it. There's no real stinkers that jump out at you like on Liam's album. There are some real stinkers. There's nothing that jumps out as being particularly bad. I haven't gone in and really thought about it too much to really give a view on what the overall message is or the thought behind the album. I think I need to think about that a bit more. But anyway, so that's my views on Who Built the Moon. I want to hear your views as well, so feel free to send me in an audio message, or feel free to stay in touch and then we'll do something over the phone. when it comes to the next episode. But we have already had a review in, so this is the thoughts of Daniel Wright.
So, just like to give my thoughts on Who Built the Moon. Listened to a few times this morning, and the standout track for me has to be Black and White Sunshine. That stood out above the others. I also think Keep On Reaching sounded a bit Stevie Wonder, which I like. Thought that was pretty good. Also, Be Careful What You Wish For had a very Beatlesy vibe. Love the singles, Fort Knox, Holy Mountain, It's a Beautiful World. Love all of them. Think listening to a few more times, my favourite track will change. But like I said before, Black and White Sunshine, just awesome. So I'd say overall a solid 8-9. Yeah, it's not a track that I don't like. So, yeah, 8 or 9 out of 10. Loving it. All right, cheers. Thanks, bye.
Cheers, Dan. Much appreciated. And as I said, if you want to email your own reviews over, please do so at oasispod@gmail.com. Let's have a bit of Liam then, shall we? It's all been a bit Noel heavy so far. Liam has been over in the over the other side of the Atlantic. He has been playing some gigs in America and in Canada. And we've had a review of Liam's gig in Toronto from Jordan Ross.
So Liam comes out, he's got his usual swagger, but right away it's clear there's an edge to him that I haven't seen much since his recent rebirth, so to speak, as a solo artist. Other than obviously the one gig in Chicago where he walked off halfway through. But in Chicago, it looked like it might have been his voice. I've also heard speculation that maybe the crowd wasn't giving him enough of a response, and he might have just been like, the hell with this. I can assure you that was not the case in Toronto. The crowd was going nuts throughout the gig. My girlfriend even, unfortunately, took a couple elbows to the head from some of the more lively bunch next to us. But Liam was a bit off. Not in his performance. To me, he sounded amazing throughout, right up until the last song, Cigarettes and Alcohol. But during the guitar riffs, he wasn't doing his usual stoic, staring down the crowd, prize fighter type thing. He would just sit by the drum kit with his face in his palm and gaze off. He looked a bit down, if I'm honest. I saw him make a gesture towards the sound guy pretty early on. Looked like he was telling him to turn up the mic. And then halfway through the gig, he actually walked over to the sound guy and yelled something at him. And with a few songs left in the gig, Liam throws his maracas at the floor towards the drum kit. And, you know, I started to get a bit nervous. I had checked the set list from the show before, so I knew the encore was probably also going to be Cigarettes and Alcohol and then Live Forever. But after the last song of the regular set list, prior to what should have been the encore, he said something to his band while still talking into the mic, something to the effect of, you know, don't go anywhere, we're going right through Cigarettes and Alcohol. So they played Cigarettes and Alcohol, and then they walked off. So about 10 minutes go by of him not coming out for an encore, and the audience starts to chat, is he coming out or not? I even heard one guy say he's just making himself his apple cider vinegar concoction and he'll be back once he drinks that. Then, you know, 20 more minutes go by and the lights are now on, but nobody from the venue or Liam's crew has announced the end of the gig. And the roadies keep coming out and, you know, playing with the instruments and stuff. So, you know, there's still hope that he's going to come out. Then finally, the sound guy threw on a track and it wasn't Liam's, and it was clear that it was done. And then the roadies actually handed out some of the set lists so I could see that it was in fact supposed to be Live Forever to end the gig. After I saw that he canceled the next gig, I'm definitely not going to complain. I actually had tickets to see Richard Ashcroft earlier this year in Toronto, and he canceled the day before, and I was really sad, but I would have, like, it would have been a whole new level if Liam canceled. It was actually my first time seeing him live. I'm a recent, you know, rediscoverer of Oasis, and I'm absolutely obsessed. And the gig was great in my eyes. It was a bit poetic, a very Oasis-type end to the gig, or a Liam-type end to the gig. And I've really enjoyed myself, and I'll definitely be back at the next one. Love the podcast. Keep it up.
Yeah, so thank you, Jordan. So, yeah, as you heard there, he obviously has been having throat problems. Didn't do the encore at that show, and then missed the next show in Boston. And he's been doing sort of then some TV shows and things. And, yeah, you can just hear it's starting to sound a bit ragged now. I think he needs to have a bit of a break. Well, I hope he does for the UK tour anyway, because it is starting to sound like getting back into the sort of the bad old days of Liam's voice. So let's hope he gives it a rest, or let's hope that magic potion works for him, because we want to hear him on top form. So, yes. So, Liam, get your voice sorted, mate. So combining both albums now, because we've got them both. Now we've had Noel's to settle for a week or so. Obviously, we've had Liam's for a couple of months now. And so now we can, and we're coming to the end of the year, so we're getting to that point of, right, well, let's sort of start to review and who's done best and things like that. So it's not a competition, we can like them both, but it's all good fun. So one of the things that we were having some fun on Twitter doing was building a As You Built the Moon, which was effectively the best songs combined of the two albums. I think it was Ben Higgins who first did this and sort of tagged me in it, showing me his version. His best of. He'd gone for a 6-6 split between the two, and so I did the same as well. Obviously, I'm going to try not to be biased either way on this podcast, but also genuinely I felt that was the right kind of split for me. So just to give you a quick heads up of my split, it was Wall of Glass, Fort Knox, Holy Mountain, Greedy Soul, Keep on Reaching, Paper Crown, If Love Is the Law, Come Back to Me, The Man Who Built the Moon, Doesn't Have to Be That Way, Dead in the Water, and For What It's Worth. So my thinking on these was that, well, I think you've got to start with Wall of Glass. That is the song of the year. With it, you know, there's so much of the year being built around waiting for that song to come out, hearing that first snippet. It sort of coincided with me starting this podcast. So that, to me, is the song of 2017. But then, similar to the way that, do you know what I mean, is the standalone track at the start of Be Here Now, and then you go into the album with My Big Mouth. I think we then go into Fort Knox, because that's the proper album opener as such. So you kind of start with Wall of Glass as your standalone single, then into Fort Knox was the album opener proper. Then Fort Knox into Holy Mountain makes sense, as it does on the Noel album. Then I think we've taken it up to a good spot. We keep it going with Greedy Soul. Then similarly to that, then we're going to go straight into Keep on Reaching, because once again, that's just such a great vibe, and coming after Greedy Soul, I think that works really well. Then I think we need to take it down a notch, as we've reached the end of side one, so let's go Paper Crown, which was my favourite track on Liam's album as well. So I think that's a great ballad to kind of end side one. Then we go on to side two. I've started it off with If Love Is the Law, which I think is, as I said earlier, is a really great upbeat track. Then Come Back to Me, Liam's track, as once again that keeps it upbeat, keeps it nice, big choruses, good sound. Then I've gone into The Man Who Built the Moon, as I said earlier, epic, dark, bizarre song. Then I'm going for It Doesn't Have to Be That Way, because I know it's only a bonus track, but I just think it's a great pop track. I think it's a very different, but once again, it's just really upbeat. Then ending off, I'm going to end it. I've seen a lot of people's versions have ended with Dead in the Water. I'm going to go Dead in the Water next after Doesn't Have to Be That Way. But then I think I'm ending mine with For What It's Worth. And the reason for that is this is, if it's an Oasis album, I think it needs to start with Liam and end with Liam's voice. So, yeah, so hence Dead in the Water and then into For What It's Worth. And that's what closes off the album. So let's have a little bit of For What It's Worth, and then we will go into my interview with Jess Greenfield.
For what it's worth, I know it's just the way.
waveforms. That's probably the technical thing to say, isn't it? I just think it's blobs. Yeah. When I'm editing the podcast, I've got to move that blob over there, and then it sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, cool. All right. So welcome to the Oasis podcast, Jess. How are you doing, Jess? No, it's not just Steen, is it? I'm going to start off by raising this because I'm so sorry. So anyone that follows on Twitter will have seen this, and I was very embarrassed in that we'd had an initial kind of couple of messages, and I was really pleased to get you on, and I thought, right, well, I would just put a quick tweet out and just to let my listeners know that you're coming on and sort of give you a bit of a, you know, a bit of a plug, and so hopefully people will follow you. And then I don't know where Justine came from, whether I was listening to Elastica earlier, I don't know, or something, but
maybe.
But then I've just put Justine down and then sort of then gone off in the car, come back about an hour later, and then I see like all these tweets.
Justine Gate.
I know. So I'm really sorry about that.
Oh no, it's fine. I mean, actually, Justine's a cool name.
I think it is.
I've got nothing against the name Justine. But yeah.
It's not your name.
It's funny. It's not my name,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, that's a Ting Ting song, isn't it? Which...
Oh, is it? Justine?
No, that's not my name.
Oh, that's my name. Oh, yeah, that's not my name. Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
And I might just drop a little bit of that in here. They call me Jane. So, thank you so much for your time. I do really appreciate it.
No, you're welcome.
And welcome to the Oasis family, High Flying Birds.
Yes. Yeah, very massively
exciting.
Go on,
tell me about it. So well, what's the, just to give me the breakdown, because the first thing I was aware of you was on Later, and then suddenly we see, oh wow, there's like new people that we don't know. I mean, it's great to see some old names, you know, because Gem was back and Chris Sharrock was back, and you know, that was really great to see those guys. And it's like, ah, and then we've got another, there's a woman on the keyboards, and there's a woman playing the scissors, and there's
I know, it's so very surprising. So, yeah, surprising. It's been amazing, really, and completely I suppose overwhelming, really, because, you know, 6 months ago, I didn't even think that this would happen in my wildest dreams. And then, you know, then I spoke to Paul, I was telling you about Paul Strange Boy Stacey, and he, and then he just sort of said, oh, I've put you forward for this, and I think you'd be great. And then that's what happened. And then I met Noel, and then, started doing rehearsals, basically.
And it was just as simple as that?
Pretty much.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I think Noel had seen a video of me and my husband, and then maybe a few weeks later or something, when Paul brought me up again, he'd remembered my voice and knew that I played keys. And so, it's basically what happened.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Just to say, when you said that Noel saw a video of you and your husband, let's just point out you're in a band with your husband.
Yes.
And I take it the video was you. Let's just make sure there's nothing dodgy.
Oh
there.
God, no, nothing dodgy.
So you were maybe
Can
playing some music together.
We were. it was a live recording from a TV show. Actually, it was the Irish TV station on Sky. But I don't expect forgiveness anymore. I don't expect you want me like before. And we were performing on, it's called the Ayala Show. And I think it was that he was shown by Paul.
I've seen that. I think that's on YouTube, actually, isn't it? So I'll drop a little clip of that in here.
Oh, great.
Thanks. But that's amazing. So what was the first, like, so you've gone in and you've done the rehearsals, and then what was the first sort of performance? Did you go out and do any of the shows with U2? Or?
Oh, I wish. No, the first thing was actually Later with Jules. That was my first gig.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You're just going to be on TV in front of a few million people.
Live.
You know, debuting these songs the first time the new lineup's playing these songs. Yeah. Oh, and live, of course, because it was the Tuesday one.
Yeah. Yeah, it was it was pretty mad, to be honest. It was pretty mad. I thought, there's no room for fucking this up. I've got to get this right. So.
And how much had you had much rehearsal time before the later show?
We'd had, I'd say probably a week in total of rehearsals. And I knew which songs I had to do and stuff like that. So I was pretty prepared, but it's quite an incredible feeling when you're actually doing something like that, you know, knowing that there's millions of people watching you. It's pretty weird, but it's always been my dream actually to do later. So it was really amazing for me. Plus with Noel, it was just a dream come true.
Well, yeah, I mean, there you go. That's just ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, and it also, I suppose the cool thing is as well. I suppose, I mean, there is pressure, obviously, but primarily as like a lead singer yourself, and now you're off at the side, you're just doing the Holy Mountain,
and
things like that, and so I suppose you can get to do it, but with a little bit of pressure off, maybe.
Exactly. No, it's true, and. And also getting to play keys as well, because I sometimes play keys in my own in my own band, but to do it, you know, to do it in this capacity is really cool as well. And doing it with Mikey Rose, such a great player and stuff like that. And it's just amazing, really, to be honest. I'm still kind of getting my head around it.
Still can't quite believe it.
No.
And so what's the plan? So is this the tours that are coming up? Are you going to be out and about doing those tours?
I am. I'm doing I'm starting. I think it starts in February, the tour.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about it.
Cool. Well, I'm going to be seeing you and Noel. I suppose he's there as well. But I'm seeing him in Cardiff. So I'll
great.
Wave at you. Okay.
Yeah. Please do. Hold a sign up.
Yeah.
We spoke on the phone.
I'll hold a sign up saying "We love you, Justine," crossed out Jess.
Can you actually do that?
I am actually going to do that now.
Thanks.
That would definitely do something online. I think that'd be. I don't know if you saw, but on Liam was playing a gig in America. He's playing a Lollapalooza, or I think it was Lollapalooza over in the States, and someone turned up saying "We love you, Noel" on a sign.
Oh shit!
And that was the and that was the gig that Liam actually walked off after about 20 minutes, claiming he had a bad throat. But then some people were saying he was pissed off about that.
Oh,
"We love you,
God.
Noel" sign. So,
oh wow, so, yeah. But, that's brave.
Yeah, there you go. But but that's cool. So well, let's take it back a little bit. So what about growing up? You're a London girl.
Yeah, I was. I was born and brought up in Camden Town.
Oh, wow.
And I lived there until last year. So I was there for a long time.
Well, I was going to say, that's right in kind of where Noel and Liam were.
Yeah.
In the vicinity of where they lived all through the 90s and stuff.
Yeah.
Chalk Farm and
exactly.
Primrose Hill.
Yeah, and actually, I told Noel this the other day, that I used to work in a shoe shop on Camden High Street, and when I was about 18, and Noel came in and bought a pair of shoes from me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's completely weird. And little did I know that, you know, years later I'd actually be playing in his band.
That is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And it was right in the, you know, the right at the sort of the peak of sort of Oasis mania as well. So it was I was pretty starstruck. Yeah,
I'm. But did you? So, what about music? Was music a big part of your life growing up?
I couldn't really avoid music because my dad is a musician, and he was playing music all around the house from when I was tiny. And my mum sang in a choir. She still sings in the choir, actually. But and my auntie is a cellist, and she was in an orchestra, and it's just always been around. And I couldn't avoid it.
And so what was your kind of favorite music? Who did you have posters of on your bedroom wall?
Well, it was such an eclectic mix of music in my house, because my dad was into rock, and he had a Latin band, so I used to listen to a lot of Latin. What else? I don't know, really. I just always liked so many different things. I didn't really have, you know, one band that I sort of followed. Mm-hmm. I just liked so many different things. But I listened to a lot of Motown music. I used to listen to, what else? Oh, I used to love Aerosmith. I loved different bands. Yeah, so many bands. And then, you know, obviously people like Dusty Springfield and... God, the list goes on. It's just so many different things, basically.
No, that's cool.
Yeah.
No, well, I mean, you could definitely have, you know, listing off, you know, Dusty and Motown and things. I mean, you can definitely hear that in your music as well,
yeah.
in the Condors. You've definitely got that old school soul sound, which is just so, you know, which is just great. I don't think anything's ever topped that sound that Motown and Stax and Atlantic were getting.
Oh,
in
it's incredible.
Sort of late 60s. It's incredible. The best, isn't it?
It is, and it's, you know, it's real. It's from a real place. It's raw. It's played by, you know, great musicians, not just technically, but it all comes from the heart. And that's what we've always wanted to sort of capture in our music, and obviously pulling on real emotions from our relationship and stuff like that without it being cheesy.
I was reading about that, actually. I was just doing a read up of a couple of interviews you've done, and because I do actually do research here on the
that's good. I'm very impressed.
Might be surprised to know. And, but they were saying that, so you've got this track Forgiveness that you've performed, and it's actually, it is really about your relationship, and
that's sort of
which is quite, yeah, it's quite brave to do that in front of you know, and then put that out there and sing about it on in front of people.
It's very brave. I won't go into exactly what it's about, but it's a very very complicated and difficult subject, and actually I find it amazing that Gavin feels that he can actually sing it as well, because when I wrote it with a friend of mine before we actually formed the duo, Gavin and I, and then we decided to do it as a duet. So I kind of admire him for being able to sing, you know, to sing those lyrics, and it was actually about him.
I remember being one with you. We get excited by the smallest thing. No other melody in my head. You were the only song I could sing. Something came along and changed my tune. You touched me and I hardly feel a thing. We've been up and down for so long. I'm tired of like a puppet on a.
Well, it's that second verse where you moan at him about leaving the toilet seat up. That really cuts deep. That's it. That have to be the second album when you're, you know, cause if you're sort of, I know you're married now and things, you know, things are really good. Then when it comes to the second album, it have to be things like, you know, you said you'd pick up milk on the way home and you forgot. You know, just mix it up a little bit.
I think you're onto something there.
Fair enough. So from growing up with all this music around in the house, then how do you then take your first steps into doing music as a living or as your main focus?
I started singing at school when I was 15, and then I did all the school concerts and stuff like that. And when I left, I knew that I wanted to do it properly and professionally and try and you know, get out there. And so I didn't, I made the decision not to go to university. And I went out there and I started singing in covers bands, basically, which, it's a good way of meeting really great musicians and also earning a living. So, and that's also how I met my husband. And I did that for years. And also in this game, it's all about who you know and word of mouth and giving off the right impression and doing a good job. So in a way, I feel like it's been the best training for any kind of gig that I've ever done. Whether it be learning lyrics or, just being able to get on with people. And it's been a great learning curve for me.
Yeah, well, it's for me, it's like an apprenticeship, right? You know,
absolutely.
And it reminds me of like when the Beatles go in and play in Hamburg.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because then, you know, if they'd been thrust into the spotlight just based on a few gigs in the cavern, then they probably wouldn't have been there. But because they had to just play for hours and hours and hours in these long sets of learning all these different songs and jazz standards and, you know, and so then when they come to write their own stuff, they suddenly, they're not just basing everything on Elvis songs, but they've suddenly got, you know, the American songbook, and they've got everything else memorized because they've had to for this gig. So I suppose in your world as well, if you've been used to playing in this covers band, you've soaked up all that other, like the best music ever made, and then you can then reconfigure it into your own stuff.
Exactly. And also just to get to work with so many great players who, whose style and feel or whatever, that, you know, that rubs off on you. And getting to work with great singers, other really great singers, and also it's given me the opportunity to work with other really great artists and stuff like that. And also it's given me the confidence to know that I could do it. I could also do that, and I can get out there, and you know, especially now because of the internet and stuff, you can do so much yourself. I feel like it's all kind of worked out to this point now. It's all kind of all come together, which is great.
No, that's cool. And then, so how do you transition then to, because you recorded in Mono Valley, right?
Yeah.
Which is where you met up with Paul Strangeboy Stacey.
Yeah.
So how did you go about choosing to go and record down there? And was it an Oasis kind of, did you remember that Oasis had recorded there, or was that just a complete
coincidence? I didn't know that until we actually got there and I saw in one of the rooms a poster on the wall of them actually in the room where we were recording. And I thought, God, that's really weird. Because at this point I knew that I was doing some gigs with Noel.
So the Noel thing was already set up before you got to Mono Valley?
Yeah. But okay. I had no idea about that, the Oasis connection with the studio. I knew Paul before we went to the studio as well, through... I also sing with John Ilsley, who is the bass player of Dire Straits. And that's how I met Paul, was through that. And he's playing guitar on it, and he's just the most incredible musician. So when it came round to Mono Valley, we were looking for a studio with really great gear, old gear, you know, really old mics and stuff like that, because we wanted to get that kind of vintage sound. And we also wanted to go to a place that was peaceful and a place where we could get all of the musicians in one place. So I think we had, in total, I think there were 9 of us, and just do it as live. And we just did, I think we did, 10 songs in 11 songs in 3 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, there you go. There's your background as all that apprenticeship you did.
That's
playing
it.
Out in covers bands and stuff comes into it.
Exactly. Because
you're not going to mess around. You know that you've just got to go in and get it done. Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. And so Paul, what was Paul's capacity in there?
So Paul, we did one day of rehearsal, and he came down and he heard some slightly different arrangements of the songs, which we been doing live, but we hadn't really thought of certain things that could change, and he really turned it on its head for the best, really. And he, when we got to the studio, he kind of got all the sound we wanted, and he was engineering and kind of co-producing it as well with us. And because we're friends, it was nice, because we could really tell him what we wanted, and we all knew each other. It was like a big family getting together. It was really lovely, actually. Difficult, but really great, and I'm really proud of it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
it's great if you've got that. I mean, it's the combination of having someone that's, you know, brilliant musically, plus also, but you're not, it's not like you've got someone in and there's going to be all that friction because you don't know them and things. That's a great combination.
Yeah. And also what's great about Paul is he gets all styles of music. So, but he's also got, when he plays guitar, he's got quite an indie sort of edge. But he's actually a jazz player as well, first and foremost. But he knows how to make our music, which is kind of soulful and old school, also have more of a current, gritty edge. It's really exciting. I can't wait to hear the finished mix.
Oh, brilliant. So what's latest? Is it just being mixed at the moment, or?
Yeah, and we're actually getting some strings added as well.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It's going to have that real kind of Motown sound on some of the tunes.
Cool. Well, I don't know. I interviewed if you wanted another Oasis tie-in, I interviewed a guy called Nick Ingman who did the strings for Be Here Now and whatever and things like that.
Oh,
so
wow.
Have you got a string guy already?
Well, we have. Oh God, that would have been amazing. We have actually. It's our friend David William Hearn, who's a. It sounds very posh, doesn't he? He's a amazing orchestrator, songwriter, composer, and he's a really good mate of ours. And he said he would put some strings down.
Fantastic.
He works with orchestras and stuff like that. But God, that would have been amazing too.
Yeah, maybe you couldn't have afforded him though. That's the only
thing. Oh no.
He's just as soon as I said that, I thought, yeah, I mean, his latest thing is just like riding high in the charts, which is he's done the Michael Bublé and Michael Ball duets album, which just, I think, about number 5 in the charts.
Do you mean Alfie Bo?
Alfie Bo,
yeah.
Alfie Bo and Michael Ball. Who did I say? Michael Bublé?
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, doesn't matter. But yeah, he's a top man. But anyway, he was really entertaining. But he'd just forgotten. I mean, that's the thing. A lot of doing these interviews with people that were there in the 90s, he'd just forgotten a lot of the songs that he'd done with Oasis. I said, did you do, there's a B-side called Dope Going Nowhere with all strings and horns all through it.
Yeah.
And he said, I've no idea. I don't remember that song. I said, okay. Well, it's so bizarre when you interview these people that have just, that lived through it and yet haven't got a clue, and yet it's the fans who tend to know more than the actual people that did it, which
it's
is
funny,
bizarre,
isn't it?
Strange. But yeah, cool. So that's any idea when that might be out?
I mean, ideally, we want to put that out next year. But, you know, I'm going on tour, but I want to utilise the most out of the free time that I'm going to have at home and stuff like that. So we'll be doing gigs also next year, doing some more gigs. And, just going to try and just get as many people to hear it. And,
That's great.
Yeah.
So you're just going to say to your husband, sorry, off on tour with Noel. See you later.
Well, yeah, actually, he's also got a really great band. He should have a listen, called Rufus Black. And it's him and a guy called Ben Jones, Scott McKeon, Layton Allen and Russ Parker. And they, Ben and Scott, played on our album. But it's amazing. It's like their stuff's like Free meets Pink Floyd meets... Reef. I mean, it's great. You should have a listen.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
What was that called, sorry?
Rufus Black.
Rufus Black.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's on Spotify.
Cool. Well, we'll maybe drop a little bit of Rufus Black in here.
Yeah.
Take
So what's it like? So in the dynamics, I mean, you mentioned about Mikey Rowe, who is, you know, for, I've not met Mikey, I've spoke to him, but the Chris, who does the Stage Left podcast, who's kind of good mate of mine, he's sort of had a, he's done interviews with Mikey and Russ Pritchard and Gem.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and Mikey's just come across so well. And everyone then has that I've heard who've worked with him have just said, oh, just the best musician they've ever worked
amazing.
With. You know, just picks things up so quickly and easily. Yeah. Is that how you found it?
He's just, he's so nice and really helpful and really put my mind at ease as soon as I got there. And just, yeah, amazing musician. You can just tell he's been doing it for a long time and he's worked with some of the greats, you know.
Cheryl
Crow. Well, exactly.
not too shabby, eh?
No, not too shabby. He's just such a lovely guy. He's just really, really cool. They're all really lovely. I mean, they've just been really, really accommodating to me. You know, because when I first got there, obviously I was thinking, well, I'm going to be the only girl here in this room. What are they going to be like? But they were all really cool. And then obviously Charlotte and Audrey, they came in, I think it was the second day, or maybe it was the first day a bit later on. But
of the rehearsals, is it?
Yeah, of the rehearsals. Charlotte obviously had to practice her scissoring. Actually, was she playing the scissors then? I can't remember. Maybe she hadn't unleashed them. At that point.
did she just have to work up to those ones? So did she start off with some little nail scissors? Perfect that, and then maybe when she tours, she can bring some garden shears.
Well, the garden shears have been mentioned.
Really? They need a. Maybe you could play the garden shears as like a given a bass sort of side of the scissor. What do you think? So did it kind of? Did it sort of? I mean, I think it was absolutely brilliant because, you know, it got so much attention.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that that happened on the Tuesday and then everyone was talking about it, you know, and obviously in my world, you know, it's just Oasis and Noel and Liam 100%. So, you know, everything was just all about the scissors. But I think even in the press and in articles and stuff. And then Liam obviously helps to promote Noel by ripping the piss out of him and things all the time, which is good fun. But then that drives all that traffic to then watch Jules on the Saturday because, you know, because then you get the three performances. So, I mean, that must have just been, did it annoy you a little bit though? Because you're like, well, hold on, I was there as well. And everyone's talking about the scissors.
Did it annoy me? I don't know. I mean, you know, I know what it's all about. And I know that, I guess if I was there as a guest or something, maybe I would have been like, oh. But because I know that I'm part of the whole thing now, I just kind of see it as a... I guess, do you know what? I guess I just know the value in what I do and I don't need to look at other people's comments or lack of comments or whatever to be like, oh, I'm doing a good job or not, you know. Right, so right. I don't know. It didn't affect me really. I just thought it was hilarious.
I it was brilliant, and I rewatched Holy Mountain just before you called.
Yeah.
And there's so many shots that the camera was right by you, and then you're in prime focus, and then Charlotte behind you. So it's such a you're like, look, there's me.
I know. Look. Yeah, I got quite a few messages actually that evening or Tuesday and Saturday.
I bet you did.
Yeah.
Fantastic. But that's just. It's just so cool, and what we've, you know, as fans of Noel, I mean, we've been, you know, just really excited. For me personally, I kind of thought, yeah, he needs to do something different next album because I've really enjoyed both his solo albums. But it's like, okay, but I think another set of songs, you know, produced in a similar way would have just been another, you know what I mean? Whereas actually, I was so excited to hear he's working, number one, working with David Holmes, who's an absolute legend and a genius. And it really feels like, yeah, he's challenged himself. But I suppose you weren't there for the recording of the album. So did you just get sent a copy of this and be like, right, you kind of need to work through it and figure out how to replicate the album? Is that kind of how it worked?
Yeah, it was, I got sent initially six tracks. Can you have a listen and learn the the parts, basically. Mm-hmm. And and I thought, wow, because it's such a big sound.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it works really well, and I really like the kind of the psychedelic angle to this album. I think it's great. I think it's really inventive, and because I've seen there's been kind of mixed reactions to it, but to play it live as well is just it's great. It's really epic.
Yeah.
And feel good. Particularly tracks like Holy Mountain.
Yeah,
having
well,
all
great.
The brass on it and stuff like that.
So loud on later, you know, with the brass kicking
out.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
It's such a big sound.
Yeah.
Cool. But then what about the other, I mean, so if you're going on tour, I mean, have you sort of had to then go away and learn and rehearse all the Oasis songs as well, I suppose?
Well, I'm actually in the process of doing that before we start rehearsals in January. So I've got my work cut out.
there's your homework but, over Christmas.
That's my Christmas. That's my Christmas sorted. Is learning songs. But actually, I was a teenager in the 90s, and I already know loads of Oasis songs. And my brother was the biggest Oasis fan, and had all of their albums, and they were constantly on. So there's something really comforting or cozy or something or homely about listening to those songs, and when we're doing rehearsals or gigs and Noel's singing, it just always takes me back to that time in my life, and you know, when it was on at home, and it's really nice actually. I really like the feeling that it gives me when I'm playing those songs or hearing Noel. And at rehearsal he did Don't Look Back in Anger, and my brother actually used to sing that when he was a kid, and he just did it with the guitar, it was really stripped back with like more of a what am I trying to say?
Well, it's like the version he's been doing live is a bit more kind of country-ish, isn't it? It's a bit more of a folky country sort of tinge to it.
Yeah, exactly. And he did it like that at the rehearsal, and I just it was just so nostalgic. I loved it. It's just really lovely. Slip inside the eye of your mind, and don't you know you might find a better place to play. You say that you've never been, but all the things that you've seen, they're gonna fade away.
Like, have you got over the fact it's Noel Gallagher, or are you just like, hey, that's cool, that's just a guy, or is it still freaking you out a little bit?
Does it freak me out? I don't know, because he is just a guy. But I think when I first met him, when I was on my way to meet him, I thought, oh wow, this is quite weird, and I did feel nervous, and I was a bit anxious about it. But we got on really well straight away, and so now it's way more relaxed, and most of the time I think, oh, he's just a really cool guy, and I think it's obviously when we're doing the gigs or whatever, I think, bloody hell, that's Noel Gallagher, bloody hell, I'm in this band. I'm a high flying bird, and I pinch myself and I think, fucking hell, this is amazing.
That's great. That's brilliant that you've, you know, and it's nice, I suppose, that you've just mixed it up a little bit, you know, having you know, it's nice he's got Gem back. And, you know, yeah. I mean, Gem just seems like the soundest person you could ever meet as well.
Yeah, he's so nice. Really, really nice.
Yeah.
And great musician as well. And
can you just say, is one of them horrible? Can you just give us some scoop? Is like maybe Russ Pritchard's, you know, really smelly or something?
Oh, Russ is a wanker. No, he's not really.
No, they're just all nice, aren't they?
They just, I mean, I want to say, like, you know, because Oasis had this kind of reputation for being, like, hard nuts and not probably, you know, if you met them, they'd all be wankers. But I don't know. I haven't met one person. Maybe it's because I'm a woman, I don't know. But I haven't met one person who I thought, oh, you're a C-U-N-T. I haven't thought that at all.
Yeah. No. Well, I think that that image of Oasis really came from, you know, primarily Liam's arrogance. And then,
right.
And then the fact you've got Boned was a, you know, the fact they were like the five lads off the council estate. But yeah. Really, you've only got Noel. I mean, and then you had Gem and Mikey and stuff that were in the later version of Oasis. But really, the that kind of five-headed Manchester aggressive band kind yeah. of has, you know, went away really when pretty early. But yeah, no, that's nice to hear. It's nice to hear that you've been so welcomed in and you know, and it just sounds so, I mean, what I thought hearing that later gig is it sounded like it was exciting to have the band back together, you know, yeah. to have Chris there and Gem there. And, you know, it was like, okay, well, and Mikey, it's like, okay, these are my guys. Mm. I know I'm in safe hands with these guys, but it did feel a bit edgier. You know, it did feel a bit edgy. And I think there was one point in later where Noel kind of had to look to one side and was pointing like, oh, I'm going to come in now. So you yeah. could tell it was like, hold on, no, this isn't the polished 100th time they've played this. Yeah. This still feels fresh.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was the case.
Yeah, it definitely felt, had an excitement to it, a newness to it. I mean, that was the first gig I'd done. So for me, I definitely thought I was kind of part of something special. And it was the first time he played those songs in front of, I mean, I think he'd done it maybe in South America, but in terms of to the general public in the UK, the people hadn't heard those songs before. Mm. So, yeah, it was definitely exciting. And I guess it did have a rawness. And we actually did some filming the other day. And after we filmed it, Noel said, oh, that's how it's fucking supposed to go. Now it sounds fucking ready or something like that. And but yeah, I don't know. I think it sounded really good, but I'm sure it will just get better and better.
So you mentioned that you grew up, you know, in North London and around that time, that with your brother being a big Oasis yeah. fan and that you followed Oasis. I mean, did they, looking back on that period and the Britpop period, and, you know, what do you think Oasis kind of meant, and what do you feel is their kind of legacy looking back at that?
I think that they were kind of symbolic of being kind of guys that just kind of spoke from the heart, even if it kind of felt like they were kind of angsty and stuff like that. It was really heartfelt, and you know, coming from council estates and stuff like that, I felt like lots of people could really relate to that. And
sure,
I don't think that exists much anymore, which is really sad. Yeah. And also when they were really, really big in the 90s, that was really my growing up era. So I felt that those songs spoke to me and my friends, and so they kind of mean that little bit more to me than, say, people that are growing up sure. now in this era.
It's funny because you get like you know, I was just talking to Anjali Dutt the other day, and she was the recording engineer on Definitely Maybe. Yeah. And she's then been a teacher, a maths teacher for the last few years. And she was sort of saying, well, no, like in the kids coming through, like I'm not hearing like that they love Oasis. Mm. You know, that's not what I'm getting. But actually from, you know, maybe I'm just obviously in Oasis bubble world, you know, with my Twitter followers and stuff. But there is a lot of people out there, like 17, 18, 19-year-olds that love them. And they are, I think with it being 20 years, you know, 20, 25 years, and with it being kind of, especially with Liam and Noel being back on the TV and on the radio and stuff, you know, I think that people are going to just constantly rediscover them. I suppose that's the timeless quality of the music as well, is that, you know, you listen to those albums and it doesn't sound like very dated, from the 70s or 80s does. It sounds fresh.
It does, and it really speaks to people. It really, really speaks to people. And and I feel that's the thing with music, a lot of pop music now, it's a lot of it is so formulaic, and it's lost it's lost that real kind of heartfelt message. Even though if you listen to the lyrics in those songs, they'll be saying, oh, I've, you know, I love you, I miss you, or whatever, but they're people in a room that are crafting a song for the purpose of someone's album. It's not
sometimes like 17 different writers.
Yeah, yeah. It's not somebody who's been in a shit situation that sat down with their guitar and thought, I want to get out of this situation. I'm not happy in this situation. I want to better myself. I want to better my family. And those songs stand the test of time. And my dad, I said earlier, he's a guitarist, and he's also a guitar teacher, and he's been teaching for a long time. And he teaches most of the kids, some of the first songs he'll teach them are Oasis songs, Wonderwall or Don't Look Back in Anger. You know, those songs he always goes back to. And I wouldn't say they're simple songs, but they're just not trying too hard to be anything. They are what they are. And
I think like with a lot of Noel's songs, you know, there is a simplicity to them, because a lot of them he just does that open chord thing where he just has the two fingers on the bottom two strings and just wiggles the other two fingers around. And, you know, so I mean, that's how I learned. I mean, I don't play guitar to any level at all, but, you know, that was it. I could sit down and go, right, well, hold on, I only need to move two fingers and I can play Wonderwall and Talk Tonight and all these brilliant songs that, you know, that simply. Yeah. You know, it's like, and it was kind of, I've said this on other episodes, but it was like lifting the kind of the lid off it and saying, look, no, you can do it.
Exactly.
You know, this is not, you know, you can look at the live video and go, oh, that doesn't appear to be that hard. You know, his fingers aren't flying up and down the neck like, you know, Jimmy Page or something. You know, it's doable. You can sit there and do it. And you know, that's how I learned guitar. And so I think that's spot on of your dad to teach it that way, because, yeah, you know, and that's the thing. All you need to be able to do, you know, I suppose there are, if you want to go and take on guitar or something to another level, then that's great. But the level that, you know, if you can play three or four Oasis songs and you've got and there's a guitar about and there's some people having a few drinks or whatever, you're a legend.
Because
you can just sit there and it's not that hard, and yet you can entertain people. And that's, you know, that is, you know, I suppose those songs just have that universal joy to
them. They do. And I guess in a way, if people can sit down, know that they can play those songs and sing those songs, it's another way that they feel kind of connected to the band and to that whole kind of the movement of it, you know? Yeah. It's like, yeah, I can really relate to that song and I can play it. And and I'm part of this thing, you know? It was Mania, wasn't it, Oasis? It was just...
Yeah, oh,
and
absolutely, yeah.
And you know, that doesn't really exist anymore. You know, you've got Taylor Swift and people like that, but there's always been like teeny pop stars. There aren't any. I don't know. Maybe it's just my age, because I'm a little bit older than, you know.
But no. I mean, there hasn't been a band that shaped like the zeitgeist that changed things. Since, I don't think. I mean, maybe like Arctic Monkeys were big, but once again, that wasn't. You know, I don't think you've got... People, I don't think, change their haircuts because of Arctic Monkeys. You know what I mean? You didn't have a, like a... You know, I don't think a generation of kids in London were doing Sheffield accents, like a generation of kids in London were doing Manchester accents, you know.
Yeah.
But it is. They just did change everything in a way that no band has done since. So, you know, so no, fair play. Right. And we always kind of end these with your favourite Oasis song.
Okay.
So have you got a particular favourite one?
Yes, I have. It's something I often...
What could it possibly be?
Well, it's something it's something that I play quite often, and it relaxes me. I just really like it. I think it's a really beautiful song, and it's Cast No Shadow. Yeah,
okay.
I think it's a really great song, and I think it's the vocals are great, and the song's great, and yeah, I love it. I always listen to it when I'm not learning all the other songs that I've got to learn for this tour.
Exactly. So are you saying you are having to learn?
No,
that
I'm
one?
Not. I don't. That's that not. That wasn't on. Well, it's a bit of a scoop, but that wasn't on the list, unfortunately.
Okay. All right. So it's a crap scoop, which is that you won't be hearing Cast No Shadow, or maybe you will, but
no.
But Jess won't be playing
it. Playing.
Or unless you're bluffing. I don't know.
I don't know.
But that's cool. Yeah, one of the things about Cast No Shadow, and it's something that comes up again and again in Oasis songs, when he says, bound with all the weight of all the words he tried to say. And it's being inarticulate and not knowing how to say the words. And that comes up in There Are Many Things That I Would Like To Say To You But I Don't Know How.
Yeah.
And it comes up in Damn My Education, I Can't Find The Words To Say, All The Things Caught In My Mind. You know, and that's something that comes up again and again. It's like, and I think that means a lot, because we want to be able to express ourselves and yet you just can't. And I think that's why people love music so much, because through listening to music they can get those emotions that, you know, they can experience those emotions that then maybe they can't articulate. And Oasis then took that to the next level by saying, I can't explain why I can't tell you what I'm feeling. And yet they just said that.
I know. I think that's what's missing a lot nowadays. And it's really sad. What I can't stand is this thing where singers that you get on lots of adverts, that kind of everything is really depressing, that kind of like sort of like wistful, sappy, pissy vocal. It's that and it's like on every fucking John Lewis advert.
Yeah.
Like, how do we make a really great song sound pathetic? Let's get that kind of singer in. Like,
well, I was really pleased actually in the new John Lewis advert that it's Elbow doing Golden
Slumbers.
Yes,
that's true.
Because I
thought,
oh, thank Christ.
Yeah.
I've heard just so many good songs ruined by those whingy vocals.
Oh, yeah, God.
I completely agree.
It's just so annoying. I would like to leave this city, and this old town don't smell too pretty, and I can feel the warning signs running around my mind. And when I leave this island, I book myself into a soul asylum. I can feel the warning signs running around. Just
good.
Does my head.
I can see why Noel gets on with you if you're willing to give people a bit of a dig. That's good.
Well, I just think, you know, there's a lot of good music in the world, and people have kind of force-fed all this shit on the radio, and there is really good stuff out there. So it's, you know, I'm glad to hear that there are podcasts and things that, you know, for people that still appreciate really good music. It's
absolutely
refreshing.
And I one of the things I try and do on this is it's not just a nostalgia fest. We do try and play new bands and new artists as well. So
that's,
you know,
great.
So we've always, you know, as I say, the doors always open, but the email's open, you know, just people ping me tracks, and if they're decent I'll play them, which is cool.
Oh, that's great.
So yeah, no, it's good. And there's some great bands out there, you know, there really are, and there's some good music out there. It's just, it's just trying to find it in the sea of the internet, which is just so hard. But so let's wrap it up then with the fact that, you know, so your band is called The Condors, which is what, K-O-N-D-O-O-R-S?
Correct. Well done.
Yeah. And and so where can the kids find you online if they want to find you, Jess?
Well, they can find us on our website, www.thecondors.com, and we've got a Facebook page. So, you can just go on there and like the page. We've got Instagram, at The Condors, and YouTube. There's stuff on YouTube as well. And obviously just keep your ears and eyes peeled, because we're going to be releasing more stuff next year. And there are a couple of tracks on Spotify from some recording we did earlier on in the year. But the album's the sort of main one that we're really excited about. So that's sort of in the process. It's going to be out very soon. Well, hopefully next year.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Well, we'll look out for it. And obviously let me know when it comes out. And we'll
To
give it a big... We'll give it a big push on here, because just great. Well, it's great to, you know, we want to support, it's cool that you've got this gig, but with Noel, but you know, it'd be great to support, you know, music and especially cool soulful 60s soul style music, which is just, as I say, which is just the pinnacle for me. You know, as much as I love Oasis and I love the Beatles, that you cannot beat, you know, as I say, that music coming out of Atlantic and Stax and
exactly.
Motown in that period. It's just the best. It's soul music for a reason, isn't it?
It's absolutely. And it's that. And I guess some of the tracks are probably nodding towards sort of Fleetwood Mac as well. So it's kind of got that of folky rock kind of vibe to it too. And I guess if people see me on the Noel gig and they think, oh, I'd love to hear how she sounds, you know, when it's not just a few lines here and there, they can hear that. You know, they can see what else I do. Yeah. So I really appreciate you.
Fantastic.
Mentioning all that. And that's very kind of you. Thank you.
No, it's cool. It's great. And, it's as I say, you're part of the family now. That's it. You're forever. You will be forever linked with the Oasis family.
That's
now.
Great.
So that's it. And when we do our Oasis Fest in 20 years' time, then you're sort of being dragged out.
Yeah.
That's it. You're done. You joke, but you know, I'm trying to make it happen. We're thinking about it. But
how long have you been trying to put that into?
Well, it would be great. I because you have Mod May Days, right? I'm thinking like the mod, you know, you have these mod weekenders and stuff, and you have and like even things like the Comic Con. You know, you can go along to Comic Con and go to panels and things like that. I'd love an Oasis Fest. You know, like do it over a couple of days in Manchester. See, you get along like Brian Cannon, who was the sleeve designer, and see if we get a couple of original members along, and you know, someone like yourself along, and do interviews in front of a panel, and then live. The Condors play in the evening. I think it'd be brilliant.
That's
like
such a great idea.
Well, I'm pretty clever. I do come up with good ideas occasionally.
That's a great idea.
So there you go. But I can't be asked to organise it. So if anyone's listening and can be asked to organise it and has a load of money to put behind it, do so. Yeah,
there's got to be someone out there.
Money. Yeah, come on,
come on, come on, people.
Email oasispod@gmail.com. We'll make it happen.
Yeah,
good. All right. Well, Jess and not Justine. Thank you so much for your time.
#Hashtag Jess not Justine.
Exactly. That's it. That'll be trendy. But no, thank you so much for your time. I can't wait to hear the Condor stuff, and I can't wait to, you know, as soon as Noel starts doing gigging again, we'll be. Finding people who have ripped them on YouTube and putting them up onto Twitter, just breaking copyright. But don't tell Noel. Don't get shut down, all right?
No. No, I won't.
And if you wouldn't mind texting Noel just to say, he's definitely my favourite, not Liam, and he's welcome on anytime.
Yeah.
But I know he's definitely not going to do the Oasis podcast, because it's the Oasis podcast.
So
we'll see.
He might do stage left.
He might do stage left.
Yeah.
But the problem with I don't know if you saw, but I actually had a tweet reply from Liam like a month or so ago. I know. And he said, so I said, because I've gone to, you know, I haven't even chased. I had a couple of emails back and forth with Marcus Russell of Ignition.
Oh, yeah.
Really to get Marcus to come on, because he was such an important part of Oasis. And I said, oh, and by the way, I'm available to speak to Noel. Radio silence, fair enough. And then but with Liam, so I've sent emailed all his different management people and heard nothing. And I just tweeted at him and said, you know, come on, Liam, the Oasis podcast is the only interview that people are really interested in, because, you know, I'm a proper fan. I'll ask him interesting questions and not just the same old, oh, so, you know,
our Oasis came back together.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, Jesus. It's so frustrating to hear him, you know, doing these crappy interviews. And he replied and he said, I know I've told them 100 times I want to speak to you.
Oh.
And so I'm like, what?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And then so I then chased up and went back to, you know, and I had an email from Debbie, his partner, who's his manager. And she sort of said, yeah, sure. OK, we'll do something. But there's, you know, later in the year, there's nothing at the moment. And yeah, but then that's been a month ago now. So we'll see.
Well, just so, yeah. But that's great, though.
So we'll keep. I know, it's brilliant. It was great to have that, you know, have that recognition that he's, by the sounds of it, aware of the podcast,
yeah,
and is, you know, and does want to do it, because, you know, the impression that we get is he's a man of the people and does really appreciate the fans.
Yeah, exactly. Great,
you know, I think with Noel it's going to be trickier, because, you know, number one, I don't necessarily think he enjoys doing interviews, and he'll do like the ones that he's been kind of told are the ones that he has to do. Mm. So to do a podcast, you know, with a, you know, a few thousand listenership, and I think the difference is all my listeners have already bought his album, right? You know, we've already got it.
Yeah.
There's not, you know, whereas, you know, if you think if he's going to go on Front Row like he did the other day on Radio 4, well, that's probably not necessarily going to be, you know, Oasis fans that are going to go out and buy it. So it makes sense for him to appeal to those people.
Mm.
But, you know, that said, if you wouldn't mind dropping me a little text, you know, is always, I'm sure I can fit him in at some point.
Okay, well, you know, the only thing like is probably the Oasis thing. It's the Oasis podcast, but you know, never say never.
I'll have to start a new one. I'll just call it the Noel Gallagher podcast.
You probably might do
that one.
Yeah,
nothing to do with Oasis podcast. No. the We Hate Liam podcast. Is
you might do that
but,
one.
You definitely do that one.
Yeah, definitely. Do
cool.
That.
All right. Well, I won't hold my breath. But Jess, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
I do really appreciate it, and. Yeah, I will. And good luck. Good luck with everything you've got
coming
up.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, all the best.
All right, thanks. As they took his soul, they stole his pride. As he faced the sun, he cast no shadow.
So thank you so much to Jess for her time. It was really good fun. I hope you guys enjoyed that interview. And if you go and see Noel in the coming months, then why don't you stand over her side of the stage and give her a wave, or even hold up a sign saying, "We love you, Justine," or something like that. That would be very entertaining. I'm sure she'd appreciate it. So that's about it for today. So thank you for listening to the Oasis podcast, and especially thanks to our patrons, Remy, Jim, Richard, Amy, Mark, Dana, Mike, Jeff, Davey, Jason, David, Casey and Fraser. You can also become a patron and support the show at patreon.com/oasispod, which is where I post articles by myself and my wonderful contributors, Richard and Kyle. Support at $3 per month or above qualifies you for your own bespoke song if you want one. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Oasis Podcast. Email me oasispod@gmail.com if you have any feedback, or if you want to do any gig reviews or album reviews, or just to take the piss out of your friends and you want me to read it on the podcast, then do it as an audio message and I'm likely to play it. T-shirts are available at TeePublic, and basically anything with the Oasis podcast logo on it is available at TeePublic. Someone's just bought a laptop cover for that, and I think that's earned me like $5, so thanks very much whoever bought that laptop cover. I don't know who it was. If it was you, please give me a shout. And I did mention on there as well, if anyone else wants to design any other Oasis podcast or Oasis related designs and ping them over to me, I'll happily make them available on TeePublic if people want them to be built into t-shirts or laptop covers or whatever it is. And a big thank you to Andrew Chester, who is at Andrew_Chester. When I mentioned about these designs that could go on TeePublic, and he's given me two, one of which I've changed my profile picture to, which is just my typical Oasis podcast logo, but instead of the eye, it's a pair of scissors. And there was also a Oasis podcast logo, but in the gap in the O, it's actually a picture of a potato with Gallagher hair. So that was brilliant. And if anyone else has any of those designs and would like to ping them over, then do feel free. It's greatly appreciated. As ever, please do subscribe on iTunes and review us on iTunes. We are also on Spotify, so make sure you're following the podcast on there. And as ever, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.